Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Hello and welcome to the latest season of Smarter Lawcast. I'm Susie Leask, partner in our corporate and commercial practice and co-lead of our Beyond Compliance initiative. In this season, we're focused on building better boards and examining the key issues facing boards and executive leaders. There are so many complexities facing businesses today, from AI to ESG, cyber to corporate governance, plus a myriad of other issues and increasingly onerous regulatory compliance and responsibility, some of which have potential for substantial personal liability and penalties. It is vital that boards and executive leaders are well equipped to minimise the risks that they face, as the potential fallout could be significant, from share price drops to reputational damage and even complete cleanouts at the executive and board level. In today's episode, we're going to discuss some of the key issues on the agenda for boards and directors. We'll share experiences from working with boards and being board directors ourselves. And then we'll look at what's on the horizon for boards in 2024 and beyond. I'm delighted to be joined by my co-host, fellow partner and co-lead of our Beyond Compliance initiative, Faye Calderon. Welcome.
Hi, Susie. So good to be here and so excited to be launching this with you and showcasing some of the extraordinary work people across the firm have been doing with boards and leaders. We've been talking about Beyond Compliance for many, many years, and certainly from an employment point of view, what used to be our Beyond Compliance offering has now become a compliance imperative, with the Respect at Work laws now requiring employers to, or businesses, to be more proactive in the way that they manage sexual harassment in the workplace. Now, we're not going to go too much into that today because that's the topic of episode two, and we have certainly plenty more to discuss, because from an employment perspective, I mean, I often get asked what's keeping leaders up at night? You know, what are the main issues that are, you know, that workplaces are facing at the moment? And a lot of HR publications and industry publications often approach me, you know, for two or three things at the start of the year. And my goodness, this year, there has been so much to cover. Everything from, you know, the biggest industrial relations reforms that we've seen in over a decade. The government seems to be releasing new bills every second month, or every time employment lawyers blink, there seems to be another piece of legislation to get across.
And it's a full-time job, right?
That's right.
Keep up on it. So
if we can't keep up on it, struggling. Exactly. You know, leaders are, you know, just this week we've had the right to disconnect laws that passed through Parliament, and I've had many, many emails, you know, flooding my inbox about, you know, wait, what's this about? Wait, what? What happened? What do I have to do? So, and, you know, we've put out an article very quickly, and like I said, we can chat about some of those things as well. But there is, this is against the backdrop of employers grappling with flexible work arrangements and the post-COVID work environment and what that looks like, and obviously increased laws in terms of flexible work arrangements, with the Fair Work Commission being able to scrutinise whether or not they have reasonable business grounds to reject flexible work requests that are made by employees, particularly difficult in this post-COVID environment for some service industries.
Absolutely. So then it seems to really be ever changing, doesn't it? It's like the ground just keeps moving underneath employers and business owners.
It really does. And I think the principles, like I, you know, with a lot of the leaders we're working with and the boards that we're working with, we are looking at more proactive initiatives, and we're not just looking at, you know, what does the law say and how do we tick the box for compliance with the law. That is the entire premise of our Beyond Compliance offering. But so we're looking at going beyond compliance and creating diverse, healthy, inclusive workplaces, ensuring, you know, that we have you know, a looking after employee well-being. So to the extent that, you know, we were having those conversations with boards already, for example, in the context of the COVID and the post-COVID environment and flexible working and just the way that work and demands have changed, coupled with the psychosocial hazards in the workplace and the emphasis that work health and safety regulators are placing on those, with many, many employers now being subjected to inspections by safety regulators. We were already talking about you've got to be cautious about not emailing employees after hours, or you've got to be cautious about working hours. There's that underlying work health and safety obligation. It also underpins the Respect at Work laws, but what the industrial relations laws are doing, or the Closing the Loopholes bills, bill or law now, you know, as it aptly says, is coming in and filling in some of that detail, and creating, you know, a bit more of an onus on employers to make sure that they are ticking the boxes as well, rather than just having these overriding duties to ensure, you know, workplace health and safety.
And that's really interesting, I think, from that perspective of beyond compliance and what does that mean? And if I put my corporate governance hat on for a minute, you know, at that board level and that risk management level, I think that's really critical. And it's interesting to me how your world in that sort of real employment law and HR space has gone, you know, almost to be trying to look towards the high watermark, but also from a risk management perspective, because it is
absolutely
a risk we have to manage as boards, as directors, as leaders, as managers. And I think that's a real change from the tick box compliance of what's the bare minimum that you have to do in terms of staff. And that's been a real shift.
It has been, like, traditionally, I mean, I've been practicing for over 20 years, but I remember when the work health and safety due diligence obligations came in place, you know, all the boards were sort of scrambling to get the employment lawyers or the safety lawyers before them to give them their rundown on what this means and whether they could end up in an orange jumpsuit. And really, that was, you know, all we heard from them for quite some time.
That personal liability piece, right? It's scary.
Yeah, that's right. And we did the annual thing, and we always have, and it's been great. It was great ground to cut our teeth on and start those interactions and talking about risk with boards. But of course, in the lead up to Respect at Work, the Me Too movement, and of course the global platform that social media has created, which has increased accountability of boards from a reputational point of view, as well as, you know, the legal changes that are you know, quickly following suit, and a lot of the pay issues as well, like even just this closed loopholes legislation that was passed this week, like there's increased again the penalties and the consequences in relation to serious contraventions. These are all things that boards are interested in from a risk point of view, but of course they are also significant things for them to be mindful of from a reputational point of view, because, you know, these, you know, be it sexual harassment or bullying stories or big, you know, underpayment claims, you know, the corporate giants that are ripping off the worker, they all make for very salacious headlines. And, you know, individuals are often being joined to these proceedings. And, you know, the naming and shaming is obviously a very big concern for board members and leaders, as well as personal culpability, which is very real.
That's the position we're in now on boards and in those senior roles, is that risk and reputation piece does go hand in hand. So it's more than just compliance, which is also a great segue to your point about work health and safety. When we think about risk and compliance and the things that have been on risk agendas, you know, I liken some of these new risks that are on the board agenda and are the hot topics as we look ahead for this year, to be, you know, the new cyber and AI risks that we're facing, and energy and ESG, and the list goes on, and that risk matrix that businesses have to deal with and boards have to manage and have strategy around and resources and parameters or guardrails, if you will. I think it's just getting to be a much longer list as the business world evolves and technology evolves.
Cybersecurity is actually one that I had, you know, sort of top of my list in terms of to ask you, and if that's been your experience with your commercial clients as well.
Absolutely.
Because obviously we get it, you know, when we're to the extent that we're talking to leaders in businesses, they just reach out for the closest contact to talk to when they've had something that might be a data breach. But I know you're closer to the ground on it, Susie, and I'd love to you know, hear more from you about it in terms of all the things that we're doing for clients and how you're working with Eden and our team as well on those.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's absolutely a hot topic on the agenda, and we have various experts across the firm who are dealing with different aspects of data breaches and cybersecurity and privacy law issues that businesses face these days. Because the reality is, when you think about the way that the business world has evolved, work health and safety used to be a really big risk in the workplace, but now we're so online and every business has some form of online system, IT platforms, emails, and from a business continuity perspective, that's a huge risk. And from a board and director perspective, how do we discharge our duties of care and diligence if we're not making sure that our business is secure? And I think, you know, you need to really be setting strategy in this technology, AI and cybersecurity space, while also putting in place some appropriate systems and parameters and guardrails. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of. We have really commercial clients who are ahead of the game and keen to use this new technology, and it's exciting, and you want to drive the business and drive efficiencies and revenue and use it as a differentiator from your competitors. But then on the flip side of that same coin, we need to also be managing that risk and putting in place some of those guardrails, whether that's policy or how we set up our business and our systems to make sure we're still protecting the business from threats and risks, whether that's privacy law issues or confidentiality or proprietary information, sensitive and, you know, intellectual property as well. It's just such a constant evolving challenge, and boards really have to keep up. I think the law's kind of catching up as well in that space. Sometimes I think the law lags a little bit behind, but, you know, the law is there, and certainly privacy law is currently under reform, and that's a really interesting space to watch. And I think it's only going to get tougher following some of those major cyber attacks that we've seen, the likes of Optus. You know, I think the regulators are going to crack down even harder, and businesses really need to be ready to be showing that they're taking all those reasonable steps and having systems and protocols in place. And, you know, as we said before, reputationally, we're not just talking about, oh, there's going to be a breach of privacy law and, you know, notifiable data breaches and cyber attacks and, you know, lost money to hackers and things like that. It's a reputational issue, and customers are voting with their feet, and they have an expectation around how you use their data and manage privacy, that if you don't manage, the reputational damage can have serious financial and general impacts on the business.
Absolutely. And I mean, speaking of, you know, the global platform of and discussion that reputational impact has, I think the other thing that is really, that boards are really focused on at the moment, it seems to be ESG and the new climate reporting laws and, you know, sort of the climate regulatory compliance framework, but also with the beyond compliance lens, ESG, and what they could be doing that's better than what they have to be doing. I think that's something that our team are right across and getting more demands than they can cope with at the moment.
Well, and it's such a market leading issue in that the businesses that get that right are going to have a real advantage.
Yeah.
And from a board perspective, if ESG is not on your agenda, then you're really missing something, because every organisation has an element of ESG, whether they're aware of it or not, and G, of course, being good governance, and let alone the S in social, and, you know, the E for your environment and your energy issues and climate, and the list goes on. It's such a broad concept these days. And as you say, the regulatory environment is changing, of course, with, you know, the draft exposure draft legislation for the climate reporting standards being released earlier this year. And I think one of the key things to remember as well, as we're talking about boards and leaders, is that we do have to expand our duties to cover these issues. And there's certainly been opinions around that, expanding duties of care and diligence, including in relation to nature-related dependencies and the impacts and risks of those issues, plus, of course, the increased focus on greenwashing and the regulatory scrutiny that we're seeing, where I think some organisations are really aspirational and well-intended, and they put a lot of statements out there, and perhaps the marketing team get a bit excited, and, you know, you end up in that greenwashing space, which, you know, we know is an enforcement and compliance priority for the regulators, and suddenly you're in that breach of misleading and deceptive advertising kind of laws under the Australian Competition Consumer Law, which is problematic. So I think we'll increasingly see a lot of regulator activity in this space. I think the regulatory environment is only going to get tougher and more onerous about organisations being transparent and reporting on these issues, and so that the markets can see transparently how businesses stack up. And I also think we'll see it in the supply chain, and indeed we are already. Some of those big procurement contracts, tenders, much like they flow down work, health and safety in the supply
chain. Diversity, and diversity, inclusion.
And yes, all of those issues. Yep. And then cyber and privacy law, which really brought the standards of the SMEs and the service providers and the suppliers in the supply chain up to the higher standard, whether they're regulated or not. I think we'll see a lot more of that sort of contractual obligations to comply with ESG issues and report as well, so that those bigger corporates upstream can comply with their reporting obligations, including on things like modern slavery and, you know, bribery and corruption, and the list goes on.
Yes. Modern slavery is a big one, and that we're also getting a lot more requests from boards about it. It has been around for a while, but I think that, you know, the laws have been around for a while, but I do think it is the procurement driver and that supply chain pressure which is causing an increased focus again.
That's right. Yeah, so there's a whole ecosystem at play here. And I do think as well that data and technology and having that information to hand and that operational level as well as the board level kind of working in hand will make some of that reporting and compliance a lot easier as you're planning out your year and your future obligations.
Now, talk to me about the work you've been doing with boards. And I know you're out there pounding the pavement on a regular basis with boards and leaders, and talking to ops people even about, you know, how to ensure compliance from a contractual point of view, from a commercial point of view. Tell us, what are you seeing out there, and what's keeping leaders up at night, you know, when they get a wink from an employment point of view, of course.
Well, and I think it is, you know, a range of the issues that we've just touched on, but also I think at that operational level, when we're looking at ways to help leaders sleep at night, it is covering off on some of those basics that should probably be done better, that contracts piece, how we're managing and mitigating risk and limiting liability, and how we're also training and supporting at an operational level, an executive leadership level, and at a management and senior and board level even, around their regulatory environments and the laws that apply to those businesses. So whether it's unfair contract terms and the new changes and penalties that have come in force there, and making sure that their contracts are compliant, to making sure that their team on the ground at the coalface who are doing deals and commercial arrangements and, you know, working at pace are aware of things like competition and consumer laws, which I think people often get wrong in a well-intentioned way, where they're accidentally landing in exclusive dealing territory, cartel conduct, a bit of bid rigging where there's discussions amongst competitors just informally. And it's interesting to me that some of these things I mean, the case law is quite extraordinary, how often it doesn't just happen at the big end of town, it's the small to medium-sized businesses that also need to be mindful of those sort of issues, and even, you know, at a consumer level as well. One of the things we commonly see is everyone's quite clear on what their policies are, but then someone on the coalface will slip up a little and mislead as to people's consumer rights by saying the wrong thing, and it's things like that. So there's just a raft of issues that we've been doing a lot of work with clients on to make sure they steer clear of some of those potholes.
They're your front line when it comes to your interaction with the public. We often talk about, you know, when we're managing disputes and sexual harassment claims, and I don't want to keep harping on because I know it's the next episode, but I have to say it, that, you know, your leaders, your line managers are your front line.
Right.
And if they're not trained, and if they don't understand what they're supposed to be doing or what they're supposed to be looking out for, the traps they can fall into, doesn't matter how much training you give your board and exec team, it's going to fall over at the front line. And so that's why you've got to start at the board level, make sure they understand the risks, obligations, then you do exec, but you can't miss the front line. And I think a lot of businesses too because they think they're too busy doing ops.
Yeah, and they forget their personal liability piece as well, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that's a key focus area. But the other thing I always talk about, whether it's in the privacy and cybersecurity space or in the contracts and the commercial space or the regulatory environment, is the human firewall.
Yeah.
Right? Because our humans, our people in our business are our first line of defense, and how we upskill them and make sure that they're across what they need to be across, and how they're helping us manage the risks and managing things day to day. When the boards and directors and senior managers and C-suite can't be in the detail of every single interaction is really critical.
Absolutely. How exciting. I am so excited for this series.
It's going to be a great season. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned. I know we won't let slip too many spoilers, but there's a fantastic lineup of special guests that you and I are going to respectively interview. I know we're kicking off with your Respect at Work episode, which I can't wait for. We're going to do one of my favorite topics, which is boards behaving badly. Fun discussion, just those lessons learned and perhaps a bit of what not to do. I hope we'll touch a little bit on what we've seen done well as well to balance that a bit. But I think there's so much to be learned. Not just in what people have done wrong at the whole other end of the scale, but also how to manage through that and how to proactively get that back on track, because it will happen in any board and certainly in any director's career at some point.
That's right. We talk about humans building resilience in their day-to-day interactions. It's exactly the same for businesses. A business is not, and leaders and boards don't build their resilience and their ability to cope with these challenges unless they've really lived through it.
And it's a pressure cooker, right?
As horrible as it is at the time.
And that's, I think, the fun part of what we do, is that proactive prevention of issues and compliance and going beyond compliance, so that you kind of stay the right side of the fence, because things do go wrong. And certainly we've seen boards that maybe the mix is not right and they're somewhat dysfunctional or not constructive, and we need to either reskill that board or exit key players. And I think there's so many lessons to be learned and war stories that we're going to share more on this podcast, which is fantastic. Thank you everyone for listening today. As always, please get in touch with us if you have any questions. You can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.